Oh man. Oh man. Here I
there it is. Hey everyone, I'm Molly Wood. Welcome back to Make Me Smart. That anguished howl you hear is Kai Rizdahl trying to make today make sense. Or maybe just his Google Doc. I'm not really sure what's happening.
Yes, starting behind the power curve. Anyway, so yes, I'm Kai. This is What Do You Want to Know Wednesday? You bring the questions. We supply the answers with help from, number one, all y'all. Number two, our producers. And three, us sometimes, because we just know the answers.
So occasionally our giant, mushy brains who've just been at this for a long time. Today we are going to, so we actually talked, obviously, on Tuesday all about cryptocurrency and Bitcoin and the Coinbase IPO and, as expected, and yet still unexpected, Coinbase had a monster IPO today. I believe briefly was in fact valued at over $100 billion. We are going to lead off where the conversation left off in some ways about that cryptocurrency exchange company Coinbase going public. Here's Bill in Denver.
Hello, Molly and Kai. My apologies for opening a wound. If it's any comfort, I have a similar wound. How is Coinbase not another Mt. Gox? Yes, they say that security is extremely important, but so did Equifax. Your thoughts? Thank you very much for making us smart.
Oh, I'm sorry. So I was busy doing the math on why that was a 300. Yeah. So once upon a time, back in the olden days, like the olden days, like 2013-ish, I bought 300 Bitcoin on the Mt. Gox, Mt. Gox exchange, which was at the time the Coinbase of the day. It was the exchange for buying, selling, and trading Bitcoin. I bought 300 at $1 each. And then Mt. Gox got hacked and my account was never able to be recovered, and so my 300 Bitcoin were lost. And while nice Bill was talking, I just opened the wound by typing in 300 times 60,000.
Molly was reminded
again that my lot in life is that God wants me to work for whatever I get anyway. Let's get to Bill's question. I like
that's
work.
That's so painful. That's so painful.
I mean, what are you going to do? Like, you know, it was the Wild West. But I will say that watching all the people on Twitter, Kevin Roos perfectly captured this in a tweet. And it was like, basically, tech Twitter today was like, congratulations on your money. Oh, no, no, congratulations on your money. Like, watching all the people who, you know, invested in Coinbase super early and have made a bajillion dollars today, I was like, you know what? I'm just going to close this tab. Anyway.
But
vis-a-vis Coinbase, I mean, look, Mt. Gox was, you know, like a pop-up cardboard shed. I think that it had started out as an online platform to trade magic cards, apparently. And then, you know, all of a sudden found itself in the middle of this like super hot Bitcoin situation and just didn't have the right security. So, along comes Coinbase, which has been at this a lot longer. It is not to say that they have not had problems. Apparently, a former Coinbase employee who's also a user is suing them. He said his account was drained by hackers. Coinbase says that it's never been hacked, but that some percentage of users have basically had their accounts taken over, like their password was stolen or someone breached their devices and got access to their accounts. But at the point at which you are a real company with 43 million customers, making $1 billion a quarter and, you know, with a valuation that's more than at $100 billion, it's pretty close to the New York Stock Exchange and the NASDAQ combined. I am assuming you have better infosec than the cardboard shed that I'll never not be mad at.
I mean, if you had that $300 back and Coinbase and Bitcoin was at some reasonable price, would you buy on Coinbase?
What, like now or then?
Yeah, now. No, like now.
Oh, you mean is Coinbase? Yeah, I mean, yes. Coinbase is a real company. It's as trustworthy. Okay, anything is hackable. Yeah. Okay. But like all of Coinbase is not going to get hacked and have every user lose access to their accounts, which is essentially what happened. You know, like a disaster of that magnitude, no chance. If I had $60,000, I'd buy a Bitcoin on Coinbase. Like, yeah, they're for real.
Yeah, okay. All right. Sorry.
Can they be hacked, though? Sure.
Yeah. Yeah, let's go a little bit farther down the rabbit hole, because I've become quite interested in crypto and blockchain and all that stuff the last number of weeks, as we've talked about. So those 300 Bitcoin that you bought, and let's remember from our conversation yesterday, there's going to be a finite amount produced and blah, blah, blah. The finite amount that's going to be produced is going to be whatever, it's 21 million Bitcoin, right? Minus 300, because yours are now just vaporized. They're just gone.
Right? I think it's just my access to them. Somebody must have them, yeah. Because, you know, they were, I guess the fact that I bought them meant that there was a record during which they were attached to me. A record was created somewhere on the blockchain where those particular 300 Bitcoin were attached to me. But then the account that was tied to those Bitcoin was itself vaporized in the hack, is how I understand it. So I don't think that those are still, those aren't assigned.
Right. So they're dead to the world, right? They're off in Bitcoin graveyard, never to be traded or, you know, split or anything, right?
I don't know. That I don't know. I would love to know that. Huh. That's a really good question. Well, and also, if all my transactions were recorded on the blockchain,
shouldn't there be some proof in the open source ledger?
Can
we not get Molly back her $19,200,000 worth of Bitcoin? That's what I'm saying.
He's trying to retire me.
Well, you know.
I mean, saying that this is a hell of a podcast idea. Don't you think, to like go on the investigative journey to try to uncover the record that I ever actually bought them?
Oh my God, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God.
Like, that's pretty cool. We need a data journalist.
Oh my God.
ASAP.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Okay.
And if this story ends with me having $19 million, buddy, you are getting a lot of good beer.
All the better. All the better. All right. Next one. Matt in Texas, talking about coworkers and vaccines and roll the tape, as they say.
The rumor was that bots were swarming these appointment booking websites and grabbing them before actual humans could. One of my more tech-savvy coworkers said, yeah, there's actually something to this. He had heard that people had set up invite-only Slack channels that the bots were then forwarding these appointments to. And I was wondering if there's anything to this. It seems a little bit like a conspiracy, but also something that people would actually do. If so, it's sad and a good example of the widening equality gap, at least where technology is concerned.
I'm reasonably sure I said exactly this on this podcast a month and a half ago, right? It's like, if people are going to go to the trouble of doing this for concert tickets, hello, vaccine bot scraping things. Yes. Right?
Yeah. And it's not a conspiracy at all. It's definitely happening. In fact, there are a couple of volunteer groups that have done this ostensibly as a public good. Like, they've said, we created these bots that notify you when there's an appointment and then you can sign up, presuming that the you at the other end of this text message or whatever is a person with a device and did internet access and the digital savvy to do all of that. There's kind of like the ones that scan the websites to look for changes and then post alerts that there are appointments available.
Right.
There is, at least according to the Associated Press, and thank you to the wonderful Marissa Cabrera for putting the story in for us for prep, which is that there is concern that scalper bots exist and potentially that they would be offering appointments up to sale, but it doesn't seem like that is happening. There does not seem to be evidence. And then the people who are using the bots, who are tech savvy enough or have the devices, are like, yay, thank you, I got an appointment for my dad out of it. But no doubt what's been fascinating about this entire system is how I talked to somebody about this actually recently, and it was about vaccines. We were totally talking about vaccine availability and how we're at this like weird mushy middle where we think, oh great, we totally have the technology for everybody to just sign up for an appointment online, except that we don't have the downstream access to the technology for everybody to just sign up online. And so it's not a simple solution. It doesn't work as an easy solution. Like, yeah, we'll just, make a mobile app.
Yeah. It's amazingly complicated and frustrating. Right. And you can see, and I just spent half an hour today trying to get my 16-year-old, now eligible in California, an appointment, and it's nightmarish. And you can totally see somebody saying, God, can't we just automate this and bippity boo, bippity bop. And here it is, presto change-o, here's your appointment, Cause it's craziness.
And right, anyway. in those are the cases in which, you know, like
right.
the opinion of, you know, the guy from Stanford who set up a web scraping bot to find and distribute information about open appointments is that this is what should be happening full stop for everybody.
Yeah.
And he was like, look, I have to know how to do this. It's not for my, you know, I can only get one shot or two shots or whatever. He's like, it's to help everyone because this is how it should be working. So we have this double whammy of sort of like not great technology being rolled out, but only online access being an option. And then people who are more tech savvy being like, oh, I can make this better. But that still favors them. And it's a hot mess. Yeah.
Hot mess.
Hot mess, but it's happening. You know what? It's a hot mess, but it is happening. And I want to focus on the miracle that is the fact that people are getting vaccinated at a remarkable clip. And that is incredible. All right, let's go to our next voice memo from Brian in Washington.
Hello, Kai and Molly.
Listening is this to the podcast guy? No, close, but not quite.
No, nope, close.
I was so disappointed in Kai. Even though I love the story about this giant rabbit missing.
Yes.
I'm more fascinated that he skipped right over one of the best news stories of the day, which at the time he was fascinated by that, him and Molly both. It's that Egypt founds the Ever Given ship over a 900 million Suez Canal compensation bill. How is that not at the top of the stories? Ever Given is back.
He's like pissed.
Ever Given is back.
They're holding it for ransom? What is it, pirates? What is going on here? Please help me understand this. How is this going to come to an end? Thank you. Keep up the great work.
I love that we could join him on
been
his walk.
Impounded. I know, right?
I actually did not know this. Otherwise, I 100% would have made this my story. I didn't even know until this voice memo. This is amazing.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's great. So the Egyptian have impounded the thing. It is there in the Great Bitter Lake, which is one of the parts of the Suez Canal. They're not letting it leave, and they want $900 million. And here's the best part, right? This is totally normal. The amazingly wonderful Marissa Cabrera called a maritime historian. His name is Sal Mercogliano, who said, and I messed up that Italian name, and I'm really sorry to Liana Squillace, who is driving this podcast today, engineering it. Anyway, so seizing vessels for damages or for payments of debts is common. They can hold it and make the vessels have to pay damages incurred by the vessel. And of course, this thing got stuck. And as we talked about, $10 billion a day in global trade was stopped. So yeah, this is a thing. Totally a thing.
I am surprised there hasn't been more. I want to know more about if they have done the investigation into how it all happened, because it has, as we talked about when my dad asked me that question of like, I'm sorry, how does the wind blow over the Empire State Building? Because it doesn't happen. Like that seems to not make that much sense. So I'm kind of curious about that too. Apparently, Sal Mercogliano also told Marissa about this story about a ship that the Egyptians have been holding since 2017. And there is a sailor who has been stuck on that ship the whole time.
The Ever Given's not going anywhere until they get their $900 million. That's all I'm saying.
I mean, I'm sorry. We also need a spinoff podcast about the Ever Given. This is incredible.
Right?
Incredible. Thank you, Brian.
It'd be like, eight installments, over one season. The Ever Given.
I mean.
Anyway. One more. We're going to squeeze it in. We're going to squeeze it in. Yep. And it's basically a PSA for listeners of Marketplace. Here we go.
Hi, Kai and Molly. This is Jeremy from Chicago. I really enjoy the show, and I have a question about the Marketplace Afternoon Report. Originally, the question was just for Kai, but recently Molly filled in for Kai, and the same thing happened to her. So it's for both of you. At the end of the show, you have a final note, and after the final note comes an economic indicator. Shouldn't the final note be the final note?
Yes, the final note should be the final note, but here's the deal. So what we used to do, so it goes final note, underwriting credits or advertising, as people say in the real world. And then the host comes back and says, that's all we got today on Wall Street this afternoon. The Dow Industrial is up 42 points, blah, blah, blah. Gives the market cap and the market recap and then the credits and then is out. But about 3-4 years ago, I was interviewing Rafael Bostic, who is the president of the Atlanta Fed. And he is a very super nice guy, but he's very... Look, there are other things going on in this economy besides the stock market, and most people in this economy actually don't participate in the stock market. And why do you guys do the numbers so much? And so two things happen. Number one is we have begun and have for a couple of years now started putting other indicators in the markets in the middle of the program, right? We'll do gas prices. We'll do survey results. We'll do other things than just companies and their share prices because Dr. Bostic is right. There's so much more to this economy than just stocks, although they are a useful indicator sometimes. So that's one thing. And in the end, we took the market recap out. And for a whole lot of structural reasons in the show, the biggest one of which is we don't want people, as soon as they hear that last advertisement, to tune out, right? We want to use our last minute of actual editorial time. And believe me, we have tried to get that last advertisement bumped to the actual end of the program, but that has not actually happened because I don't have as much power as I would like. I decided to start throwing in a thing that was just interesting to me that day. And I called it on the fly, a moment of economic context, and it stuck. And I apologize to Molly and Kimberly and Amy who now have to do that because I started
it. Happens
but that's
to
why.
Us now.
That's right. That's right. It happens to you now. But that's why half the people in this economy don't have money in the stock market, and we should not overemphasize the stock market. So that's what we're doing. That's why.
Yeah.
Good question. Totally good question.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But also, can you imagine the hue and cry if you stop calling the final note the final note? Like sometimes the traps that you have to live in when you are an institution.
It's you. If we change the numbers too much, if I for one reason or another don't say, but first let's do the numbers on the program. Hell to pay. Mm-hmm. Hell to pay.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Forget about it.
Don't mess with public radio listeners. That's all I'm saying.
You are very, very delightfully loyal, brilliant, wonderful creatures of habit. Yeah. All right. That is it
creatures
for What Do You Want to Know Wednesday. We'll be back tomorrow. Keep sending your questions, emails, and voice memos out on your walk. I love it. Make me smart at marketplace.org. That's so good. I love the crunchy foot sounds.
Yeah.
I think it had Foley.
I was on the phone this morning with Fargali out walking the dogs, and I was opening a poop bag. And it was all crinkly, and she could hear that. And she's like, what are you doing? And I'm like, I'm picking up dog poop. What do you mean, wait a minute? Anyway, Make Me Smart is produced and directed by Marissa Cabrera, as I believe we have said a number of times through the podcast today. Tony Wagner is one of our producers. Eric Phillips does our newsletters, also does those Make Me Smart explainers that you hear us do on those devices.
Today's program was engineered by Liana Squillaci, who kept us in line. Ben Tolliday and Daniel Ramirez composed our theme music. Donna Tam is the senior producer. The executive director of On Demand is Sitar Nieves. I would just like you to know that I did an interview with a guy today about speech recognition, and even he couldn't say smart speaker.
Yeah, it's hard.
He said smart smeaker. This is just like a note to the industry. Hard, they're going to have to change the name.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.